You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where you never go full SJW. I'm your host, Justin Elbazdeski, and if you got that reference, you belong here in the midside, and your friends probably do too, so why not tell them about the show? And if you didn't get that reference, you will in a few minutes. Joining me this trip, back in our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Oh, what a whirlwind it's been. A trip to glorious Paxton, Illinois, for my cousin's wedding, Midsider Nick's and Paige's wedding, which I officiated. Yeah, go me. And then a quick trip home and then to New Orleans, the Big Easy, where I officiated Midsider Amber and Frank's wedding. So, back-to-back weddings for me, but man, it's good to be back here in the big, not-so-easy Midside. I don't know. Couldn't think of a New Orleans joke.
We were speculating while you were gone. How did it feel to not get paid for all that work you did for those weddings?
It feels great because I did it for people who I love.
So. Impossible. That's not how selfishness works, Daniel.
Indeed. Although I did, I have considered having a little side business where I promote myself as a secular wedding officiant, since it seems to be in increasing demand. And just, in fact, having a ready-made ceremony seems to me like a value add. So all you midsiders out there, I too can officiate your wedding for the low, low price of we'll negotiate it later.
I reserve all rights to have a certain percentage be put back into the midside because that was advertised on the midside without my consent.
The midside does not endorse Daniel D. Richards officiant.
Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forego his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, I'm flying high. Michigan beat Penn State, number 4 in the nation now. So we're all prepared for our future loss to Ohio State in a couple weeks.
Ohio State, Michigan. William, does any of this really matter? We all know the best two teams in the country are Alabama, Clemson.
Huh. We shall see. That's what the playoffs are supposed to do, right?
That's it. Yeah, that's all you're going to say is we shall see. Come on, Daniel. You got my back here?
That's the worst crap talk I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Well, after the last 6 years, I don't think I'm authorized to talk much crap.
You've been Harbaugh'd.
Well, yeah, that's actually the good thing. We were pretty inconsistent, but this year that may have changed.
All right, well, it's fine you're not going to shit talk because you can just save it for the news because there's a lot of shitty talk going on in the news this week. Let's head into it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Halloween is come and gone, but cultural appropriation, unfortunately, has not. Indeed, parents now are speaking out about whether or not a Black Panther Halloween costume was or was not cultural appropriation. Indeed, this article in People magazine, the collectivist magazine known as People, starts like this. Parents of white children may want to think twice before purchasing a Black Panther Halloween costume. The blockbuster superhero film is sure to spawn some of the most popular get-ups this season, but many are advising parents to consider all angles before giving in to their children's wishes, namely, exploring the idea of whether a white child dressing up as any of the film's black characters would be considered cultural appropriation. In a piece for the New York Times published shortly ahead of the film's February release, Kwame Opam interviewed multiple individuals who gave their opinion on whether white children donning the iconic outfit and mask of T'Challa, the king of the fictional African nation of Wakanda, would be ignorant, innocent, or somewhere in between. Bridget Vitrup, don't know who that is. Oh, here it is. She's the early childhood development and education something or other at Texas Women's University, told the New York Times, quote, as parents, or even as the people creating costumes, we need to be very aware of what that says. There is not a whole lot of black superheroes, so this is really important thing, especially for black kids growing up. She continued, quote, white people have the privilege of not constantly being reminded of their race in the United States. This is where you laugh. Where white is the majority, whereas a black person, you don't. Justin, did you see lots of Black Panther faced kids during your trick-or-treating season this year?
It's interesting that you ask that, because I live in Southern California, the world mecca of cultural diversity, right? Racial diversity. I did, supposedly, in fact, see Black Panther costumes, except they were Asian and Hispanic kids dressed as Black Panther. And I got really confused, because I was like, do I get offended? Is this a good thing? Are they allowed? Is the Hispanic kid allowed, but the Asian kid isn't? How do I respond to this?
Yes, indeed. But so how did you respond to it? Did you scream at them that they're a racist and then throw rocks at them?
No, I contemplated my own whiteness. No, I did contemplate things, but it was not my own whiteness. So the first thing is, I have a way to avoid all of this, Daniel. Don't buy $30 store-bought costumes, okay?
Oh, there you go.
Be creative and come up with your own fucking costume. When I was a kid and we wanted to be something, you know what my mom did? She made the fucking costume by hand, uphill both ways in the snow.
Talk about white privilege.
How is that white privilege? Because my mom actually cared about me?
You had a mom.
Oh, I had a mom. No, I think the problem is they don't have dads. It's not the mothers that are the problem.
Watch it.
They're all the dads. Like, it's the same like 20 NBA players that are all their dads, right?
Well, and there goes the show. It was a good one.
Man, Daniel comes back and we get taken off the air within the first news story.
It's all Daniel's fault, clearly. It's all Daniel's fault.
Yeah,
you bring him on the show, it all goes downhill. No, I mean, look, be creative, be interesting. Don't just buy a store-bought costume. What are you doing? It's Halloween. You can do things. You can be interesting. But no, people are lazy fucks, and they just want to, whatever's popular, that's what they want to do. That happened at work. Some guy came in a Vision $30 costume, Vision from Avengers, and everyone thought it was a big deal. Meanwhile, there was a guy in a homemade Indiana Jones costume, and nobody said shit about him. I was like, are you guys serious?
Yes, Justin, all those lazy seven-year-olds who can't be creative and come up with a costume.
How dare they?
You want to be Black Panther, the coolest superhero. So, William, is this
I wasn't done.
Oh, I was hoping you were.
Daniel's back. This isn't your show anymore.
I do wonder that when I get messages that's like, where's Daniel? I'm like, what the fuck? I made the show. I made Midside. You want the paper I wrote that came up with Midside? It wasn't Daniel.
That's right.
No,
Justin cries over your DMs.
It's better than crying over the DMs. Never mind. I'm not going to say anything.
Okay, don't do it. Just move on.
No, this is the question I have. Isn't Black Panther an American movie?
Yes.
So if they're wearing these things and they're American, how can they appropriate their own culture? That's what I don't understand. And if white kids and Hispanic kids and Asian kids are dressing as Black Panther, isn't that a win for race relations? That they all want to be the black guy? That's a win, isn't it? Isn't it like when people were dressing up like Mr. T? Like, that's a win. Everyone's like, oh, I can be anyone. I can be, in my fantasy world, be anyone, and I want to be Mr. T. In my fantasy world, I can be anyone, and I want to be T'Challa. Is that not a win for race relations?
Yeah, it's not good enough, though, right? Because we already had that. I mean, if you add in Black Panther, you ask the average, let's say, 9-year-old, who's your favorite sports star, it's either Cam Newton or LeBron James. Who's your favorite musician? It's either Kanye West or...
Race aside, Cam Newton and LeBron James? I'm sorry, that's terrible.
Who's your favorite superhero? Now the answer is Black Panther, and this hypothetical 9-year-old could be any race. It doesn't matter, because kids don't care. Kids aren't thinking about if they're appropriating someone else's culture. They're thinking, this guy kicks ass, and I want to be this guy. I don't care if this guy is black or Asian or whatever. He's awesome, and I want to be him. That is the ultimate compliment. So, William, when will these social justice morons be satisfied?
I think we know the answer to that, and it is never. Correct. I think, didn't Megyn Kelly get kicked off her morning show for pointing out the fact that there's a difference between dressing in blackface to make fun of African Americans and dressing up like Black Panther? Like, there's a huge difference there. And I think that we need to, like, kind of make that into the principle that we already know, which is context matters. You know, I think you made the point quite well. Kids don't care. They just want to dress up as someone that is cool. And I saw a bunch of Iron Man in my neighborhood, and you know that they were all Asian and Hispanic in my neighborhood. So there are a lot of Iron Mans.
I mean,
isn't that doubly like bad, right? In social justice language, one, they're culturally appropriating, and then two, they're dressing up like the man,
a billionaire. That's right.
A white billionaire businessman, the most evil thing on earth.
Womanizer. Probably
so full of
someone.
Privilege. Yeah. Hashtag me too.
I mean, isn't Iron Man 2 when he forces, what's her name? Scarlett Johansson, whatever, Natasha Romanoff, to fight him in the ring? Isn't that a Harvey Weinstein move?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't know what you want me to say there.
Yes, you were supposed to say yes.
So I don't think anyone's going to be satisfied with this.
Sorry.
I think that people are, if anything, as much media buzz and like over the top the sort of like outrage class was about Halloween this year, like it seemed like even more than last year. When you looked at the actual kids in my neighborhood, at least, they didn't care. They just dressed up as who they wanted, and that gives me hope for the future.
Well, Daniel, I have a question for you based upon what William's saying.
FE2 joke?
No, it's not. It's about social media. Because a couple years ago, all social media was, they would come up with days. Oh, it's hamburger day. Oh, it's cheeseburger day. Oh, it's vegan burger day. To have content for their social media channels. Isn't it now just that social justice is the content du jour that's an easy slam dunk to go to when you have nothing else for your channel? So having all this outrage on Halloween is largely manufactured because it's just easy way to drive traffic to your channel?
Certainly. You just pick out the cause du jour or the Marxist critical theory of the day, and you look down the list and you go, okay, this is either in some way sexist, racist, Eurocentric, cisgendered, you know, what is it? And then plug in whatever the noun is, and then boom, you have a story, like People Magazine. Black Panther costumes are cultural appropriation. You could easily read sushi is cultural appropriation, or Taco Tuesday is cultural appropriation. It doesn't matter, just whatever the noun is cultural appropriation, and then you have a story. Click. Make money. Because, just so you know, FE is the periodic table symbol for iron, so my joke was actually really intelligent.
Yeah, we got it. We were just ignoring it.
Don't
ignore William, isn't the difference between blackface and dressing up as Black Panther that it's literally just a mask? So you don't have to put anything on your face. You're wearing a mask. I mean, theoretically, there could be an albino in Wakanda who wins the duel and becomes Black Panther and wears the costume.
So you're saying the difference is whether I wear makeup to get the effect or whether I wear a mask, that's the difference?
Well, no. I'm saying the mask in itself is not of a black person. It's of an animal, which is a Black Panther. I mean, there's the Black Panther in the Jungle Book, too. If I dress up like the Black Panther in the Jungle Book, am I trying to be a black person?
Well, it depends on what accent you use to talk with.
Also, couldn't a white person live in Wakanda? And
no.
Win the whatever? Why do they have to be an albino?
William's fucking response.
Do they not give out passports to Whitey or?
Oh, there are no passports. They just open their borders. You haven't seen the movie. That's right. Yeah, the whole point of Wakanda was it was closed. Their borders were closed. Do you want to see how ironic that is?
They didn't want any white people caravans coming into Wakanda?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, how are they going to handle that now? At the end of the movie, the whole end of the movie was we have to live in a global society. So if their borders are open now, shouldn't white people live there? And shouldn't a white person be able to challenge for the throne of Black Panther?
That's right. Although White Caravan, way bougier. Just imagine the craft beer you have along the way. Anyway, okay, let's move on to more costume craziness. Sean White was criticized this week for a
Sean
controversial...
What?
Wasn't it White?
White, yeah, White. I just want to have it. Sean White.
Because he's okay. White.
Good. You know, that people aren't, you know, like, named after, like, they're not given their name based on their race.
Oh, we aren't? I thought in today's world we were.
Okay. Sean White is facing some criticism.
Sean Ginger?
Sean Extra White is facing some criticism for having an offensive Halloween costume. The Olympic gold medalist posted a now-deleted photo on Instagram of himself dressed up as Simple Jack from the movie Tropic Thunder. Jack, as you may or may not remember, is a character from the movie within the movie that makes fun of intellectually disabled people. In Tropic Thunder, he is frequently referred to as a, and then the headline here is the R word, so I'm not sure if we can say it anymore, but he's referred to as a retard, something the Special Olympics spoke out against when the film was initially released. Special Olympic global messenger Dustin Plunkett said in 2008, "When I heard about it, I felt really hurt inside. I cannot believe a writer could write something like that, and it's not the way that we want to be portrayed. We have feelings. We don't like the word retard. We are people. We're just like any other people out there. We want to be ourselves and not be discriminated against." But free speech defenders, of course, said that the movie was not mocking disabled people, but it was a form of creativity. Robert Downey Jr., in fact, said, "I think it's open to interpretation, and that's the great thing. You know, if I want to protest something because it offends me, that's my right as American. It's also any artist's right to say and do whatever they want to do." But Sean White decided that this was indeed offensive, so he deleted the picture and posted an apology. He said, "I owe everyone in the Special Olympics community an apology for my poor choice of Halloween costume the other night. It was a last-minute decision. It was the wrong one. The Special Olympics were right to call me out on it. They do great work supporting so many tremendous athletes, and I am sorry for being insensitive. Lesson learned." Justin, he went full the R word.
Oh, that was a setup. Usually ask a question. Yeah, he went full retard by apologizing and taking the picture down. He doesn't really feel bad about it. It's just his PR people. His manager was like, Sean, not another controversy. I mean, you really stepped in it, Daniel. Were you saying he went full R? Or you were saying he is a rapist? Is that what you were saying? Because isn't that what he was accused of before?
How many R words are there? This is going to get confusing.
Yeah, no, I know.
The
line
rape,
of the movie is never
retard.
Go full R word, right?
Right, you never go full retard. That's the saying in the movie. And that's the thing about the movie that people are missing. Like, it's playing with these things. It's saying, where is the line that's offensive? Because let us not forget that also in that movie, Robert Downey Jr. dresses up like a white guy with blackface because he's trying to get in the role for a movie, in the mindset of a movie.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point of playing with all of it. And also, the entire point of saying you never go full retard is twofold. One, you never go full retard because on face value, it's bad to be intellectually disabled. That's the point with that. And then the second point is you never go full retard because that's naturalistic. And the movie is saying going naturalistic like that is bad because you're missing the point. At that point, it almost becomes a mockery. It almost becomes a satire by how you're acting 100% real. No one wants to actually see that. So they're all missing the point. You could even argue Sean White costume by having that is making fun of all of that.
Yeah, but it's too intellectual for our current culture. Right, William? Like, no one's going to think two or three levels deep here. It's just this movie portrayed someone, they use the word retard, therefore movie bad, right?
Yeah, it gets back to the NPC meme, right? This is the NPC response to this. It's the same thing I said during the first story. Context matters, and that's it. I mean, I can't imagine being a fan of a movie and you dressing up like one of the characters and everyone reading this other context into it, right? Ignoring the actual context of the film. Right. it doesn't make any sense to me. If someone dresses up as Freddy Krueger or Jason, I don't assume they're a murderer. Right?
Give it a few years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I dressed up as a character from Mario Kart, the ghost called Boo, 1 year. Does that mean that I'm a large, semi-transparent person that covers their eyes when you look at them?
William, why do you support ectoplasm?
I don't know.
I just heard that William's trans. Did I hear correctly?
What would that even be? Trans paranormal?
Yeah, trans paranormal.
Yeah. I don't even know anymore. Part of all this that gets me, I think we've said this a couple times in the show, but it seems to me that it's an extra level of crazy for the free speech police to go after comedy. Because the entire point of comedy is to look at absurdities of things. It's to sort of deconstruct in a certain sense. And it's comedy. They're jokes. It's not as if the movie is actually advocating for, in real life, making fun of people with mental disabilities. That would be insane. And looking back at, like, Tropic Thunder, that's 2008. That's 10 years ago. 10 years! The culture has decayed this much in 10 years, gentlemen. Imagine, I like to imagine, like, if we could somehow foist this upon the culture, like, pretending like Blazing Saddles was a new release and getting it into theaters, and just watching social justice warriors' heads just literally explode, like in Kingsman, from that epic scene, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, Daniel, that was in one of the reviews that you missed when you were gone officiating all those weddings. Is I talked about The Replacements starring Keanu Reeves and all of the things in that movie came out in 1999, and I was watching that movie and I was going, how could this ever be made? Like, they literally use guns to defend their quarterback Shane Falco, Keanu Reeves, from the attack of the non-replacement players, and all that gets happened is their guns are confiscated and they're told never to do it again. That's it. They just say, turn in your firearms. If that happened nowadays, and then the quarterback hooks up with the head cheerleader, if that happened nowadays, that movie couldn't be made.
No, absolutely not. That's misogynistic, and it's pro-gun, and it's anti-black, and it's all these things. The culture is decaying at a rate that seems to me totally unsustainable. Basically, that either we're going to go off a cliff, and there's no recovering it, or people are going to go, wait a minute, we have to turn the ship around right now. And I honestly don't know which one it is. I hope it's the latter. I think Justin thinks it's the former.
Well, it's definitely the former out here in California, but that's the question I have about all of this stuff. I've always had this question. It's always the question about who are the true believers and who are the people who are pushing this for the agenda, because that's the only way they can get ahead, right? We've talked about that over and over again. There are people who say these things because they know they can't get ahead any other way. So this is their way of grabbing power and clout and money because they can't do it the honest way and the just way. So this is how they do it. And then there are people who truly believe this. I really wonder, because something that's always been said is the silent majority. I really wonder how many people just keep their mouths shut because they don't want to deal with this, and they just let the insane people prattle along. We know that happens in social media. How much does that happen in real life, too? Because there becomes a certain point in your life where you just logistically have to work hard to survive and then work hard for your values, and you don't have time to worry about this.
Yeah, I get it, but think about in 2008. I suspect the opinions we're talking about now were out there. They were put out on the internet or whatever was available then. Twitter might have just been available in 2008. But it was sort of like this ultra fringe opinion. It would have been something you'd only hear in a classroom at Ithaca, for instance.
Hey. It's true, though. It's true. I was actually thinking about what you were saying before you even brought it up. I was thinking about it pre-show prepping, and I was thinking, yeah, the culture has decayed this much. But you know what? For me, this isn't abnormal because I've been through all of this my entire life.
Right. So this would have been something you would have heard in a super liberal arts college on the East Coast or the West Coast.
And upstate New York.
This is basically if it's not a majority, and I don't think it is a majority, it's still a mainstream opinion. And that's what's frightening in 10 years. Like, what now? What fringe opinions now, if the culture continues to decay, what fringe opinions that are being taught in these coastal, quote-unquote, elite schools is going to be a mainstream opinion in 10 years? That is a frightening thought to me, assuming that the rate of cultural decay. I don't know if it will, but assuming it does. Well, now that you're all depressed, let's move on to a story that's a little less depressing and a little more farcical. Airports around the country have suggested making the plane arrival emoji a little less crashy. This is a story I know that's near and dear to Justin's heart because it has to do with naturalism. Okay, airport and aviation enthusiasts across the country took to Twitter on Tuesday, someone who wrote this story loves alliteration, with a humble request to make the plane emoji a little less crashy. The Dallas-Fort Worth Airport Twitter account sent out an appeal to Unicode, the organization behind the nearly 3,000-symbol emoji language, asking that the image of an airplane preparing to land not tilt nose downward toward the runway. The tweet read like this, "Loving the new emojis," they wrote, but added, "On behalf of hashtag airport Twitter and pilots everywhere, we'd like to kindly request a re-angling." And they took the plane that's pointed a little bit toward the runway, and they pointed it evenly, parallel with the runway. Other airports around the country jumped in with their approval, including Reagan Airport here in D.C., which tweeted a Meryl Streep standing applause meme or whatever it is. The St. Louis Airport said, "Thank goodness someone said it." Memphis International said, "Yes, thank you. The other one is a little too crashy." In reality, of course, commercial aircraft land on their back gear first and angled slightly upwards, the exact opposite way the plane is depicted in the emoji. That's a plane crashing, not a plane landing. So, Justin, do you support this proposed change of emoji so that it is absolutely parallel with the runway here, or even tilted a little upward as it's landing?
I don't support anything where the main adjective sounds like it was come up with by a third grader. If you're to the point in your life where it's your critique is it's a little too crashy, I think you need to look at yourself in the mirror before you get up in the morning. You know, my main cause is that this is a little too watery. This is a little too I wish restaurants would make their food less watery. Crashy? That's what you're saying, Memphis Airport. Memphis Airport, who tweeted that as an adult and was like, you know, this emoji, it's a little too crashy. You didn't even say crash-like. You said crashy. And here's the other thing.
I feel
thing.
Like that's an internet thing.
Well, yeah, Bodie McBoatface, right? Crashy McCrashface. Fuck
yes,
off.
Yes, a candidate we interviewed where I work, when asked her opinion of Ted Cruz, this was during the 2016 primary, said that he had a rapey face.
I would have so stopped the interview right there and said, "You can leave."
This is something the kids are saying. I think this person did not get the job.
But even the rapey is even worse, right? Because what is a rapey face? Okay, I can understand saying this is crashy, right? I can understand, like, jokingly saying this plane thing looks crashy, this emoji looks crashy. But a rapey face? Could you line up a bunch of people and one's a rapist and you could pick him out because of his rapey face?
Man, that would make lineups way easier. Police lineups would be way easier if that were true.
Somebody's watched a little too much SVU if they think somebody has a rapey face.
Enhance.
But that's entirely the point
Enhance.
Of this.
Enhance.
No one's ever going to look if you actually depicted the emoji like the plane landing. And this is what you're talking about with the naturalism, Daniel. And you saw the gears coming down first. Anytime you tweeted that, people would be like, "Where are you going? Oh, take it off. Hope you have a good trip." Because it doesn't fucking look like a plane landing.
Well, you know, if we're going to go all full naturalism with this, the plane, the proportions are wrong. The wings are in the wrong spot. I mean, this thing will not fly. This cartoon drawing will not fly. So changing its angle of attack is not going to help the fact that it's just not aerodynamic. So it's still going to be crashy.
Okay, well, if we're going to go full naturalism with our emojis, I don't know why the goat emoji has fur and doesn't look more like Tom Brady.
It's true. Exactly. Now, so part of this is about a communications thing, right, Justin? You know, the point is what are you trying to communicate with this emoji, or what is the point of an emoji in general? And I think it's supposed to be shorthand. It's supposed to convey not complex, but maybe a somewhat complicated message in a very short period of time.
Isn't this thing, though, because people were using the plane emoji to say they were landing? So Apple was like, oh, if we do a landing and a taking off one, it'll make it easier for people, because this is one of the common uses of it.
Right. That's the point. It's the communication is up or down. Like, is your plane headed up or down? Not is your plane taking off or crashing? And to want it to be to correspond with reality is doesn't serve its communication function. And look no further, by the way, than almost every single airport sign for arrivals and departures. I just Google image searched this to be sure, but
they're
just
all search
crashy. Arrival departure sign. Every single one is an airplane pointing up or down. Some of them straight up and straight down, by the way, literally north and south.
So this is literally, Daniel, a case of clean up your own kitchen before you start complaining outwardly, which then proves that this is all just virtue signaling. This, we're now to the point that airports are virtue signaling on social media. Let's think about that for a second. Because if these people really had a problem, would they not be bugging their local, whoever is in charge of the signage at the airports? Because wouldn't that anger them every day? I know there's shit I get mad about every day. I get mad every day where the fat people take the elevator up from ground to the first floor, and that bugs me every day. I'm not going to go tweet about fat people on social. Well, that's a lie. But you get the point.
I've totally
I'm
seen you do that before.
Yeah, I know. But you get the point I'm making, right? If they were really upset about this, they would take care of it at home first.
Yeah, it's a ploy to get, I don't know.
It's just a way to create social media Twitter buzz, and we've already spent too much time on it, giving it more buzz than it deserves.
Side point, why do airports need Twitter accounts with social media buzz?
They don't. They just need one that tweets out all the departures and the delays and everything. That's it.
Yeah, let me know if there's some construction going on so I can avoid your parking garage. But other than that, I don't care about what you have to say. I don't care if you think emojis are right or wrong. Jeez, effing. Okay. Moving on to the thing that really matters, really the story of the week, which is that for all of you in irrational states, so you experienced daylight savings time recently, this past weekend, in fact. And
Daniel, did you not read the article? It's daylight saving, not daylight savings time.
Oh, my God. I don't care. So Business Insider has a opinion piece by one Dave Mosher, the title of which is Daylight Saving Time is a Curse Against Humanity and We Should End It Forever. So it's a balanced piece. So this is what it said. On Sunday, November 4th, at the stroke of 2 a.m., most people in North America will roll back their clocks. In fact, did roll back their clocks 1 hour to end Daylight Savings Time, or DST. There's some reason to celebrate. This will give hundreds of millions of people one extra hour of sleep. Side point, unless you have a young child, because they are not on the daylight savings time schedule.
Side point to your side point, it's also short-term thinking that gets everyone in trouble. You got to pay that bill in the spring, motherfuckers, and when the spring comes around, you're going to be really upset when you lose that hour of sleep.
When I heard about this as a child, I literally said this to a teacher. I said, that's like taking a blanket, cutting an inch off the bottom, and sewing it to the top and saying I've got an extra inch on my blanket.
That's a pretty good metaphor.
Yeah. Genius.
Man, you were smart. Child. What happened?
I met you.
He became a father.
My brain with football.
That's true. That's true. But so, it's worth trading that for Tom Brady in your head. So
it's true. Absolutely. So Mr. Mosher continues with his argument. This is perhaps the modern world's dumbest ritual, a curse upon those who live within its confines and a practice that needs to be abolished. Daylight saving time, and this is where he says, not daylight savings time, was created during World War I to decrease energy use. The practice was implemented year-round in 1942 during World War II. Not waking up in the dark, the thinking went, would decrease fuel use for lighting and heating. That would help conserve energy supplies to help the war effort. Nearly 100 years later, though, the U.S. is a divided nation on the topic. A 2012 survey of 1,000 American adults found that 45% thought daylight savings time was worth it, while more than 40% are much smarter than that. More than 152,000 people have petitioned Congress to end daylight saving time. Even sounds dumb. Some of the comments on the petition are practical appeals. Quote, please stop switching the time. It's awful driving home in the dark. I'm a woman that drives 30 miles down a two-lane state highway to get home.
Wow, internalized misogyny as if her gender mattered.
There's some other fun quotes, but this is the thing. There's no evidence to really suggest that we're saving any energy on daylight saving time. And in fact, we could be using more. And not the least of, and the other problem is that it causes a bunch of psychological anxiety when you have to give up sleep later on, and it causes seasonal depression and all these other things, and no one really likes it. What say you, Justin? Should we finally abolish daylight saving time?
I don't care. Look. Fix the homeless problem. Fix the traffic problem. If you want to get rid of the extra hour, fine, get rid of it. If you want to add it 2 hours, fine, I don't care. This is so... Look, I don't disagree with any of these arguments, but this is so low on the list of things I care about and problems we have in this world. There's literally shit all over the streets of San Francisco to the point that they needed to create a Snapcrap app, okay? We talked about it last episode. What do you think they're more worried about? Do you think they go home at night and they're like, oh man, let me just step over this shit so I can write mean posts about daylight saving time on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but it could be costing like hundreds of millions of dollars in productivity the way we keep doing this. So
it also costs lives. I mean, the suicide rate around daylight savings time shifts is quite high.
Interesting.
What? Is that real?
Yeah.
What is the suicide rate higher around? Transgenderism or daylight saving time?
You see a noticeable, statistically significant rise in car accidents and suicides in the 3 weeks after the time shift.
All right, I'm staying home. I have a good excuse that I can get paid leave for the 3 weeks after we spring forward. Is that what you're saying?
It's both, though, because it's about sleep disruption, probably. So it's this one and the next one. It's both.
All right, I'm not going to work for the next 3 weeks.
So everyone should move to Arizona because they don't observe this nonsense time change. One of the one things the state does well. But William, is abolishing daylight saving time just a stepping stone to changing our time zones in general?
I don't know. I know that people have proposed crazy internet time stuff before. If you work in the tech industry, especially like security infosec, like I do, everything's in UTC anyway. I know that I freak people out because I'm always using military time because that's easier to shift around time zones in. Time zones are super complicated. Even computers can't get it right. It's like you get a time zone update like every couple weeks because things are changing across the world with the different time zones. So it's overly complicated. That being said, in California, we have Proposition 7, which would basically a yes vote means that if the federal government allowed it, California, with a 2/3 vote in its House of Representatives and Senate, would adopt daylight savings time year round. Now, this sounds great. Florida had a similar measure. But the problem is the federal government doesn't allow you to adopt daylight savings time year round. You can only opt out of observing daylight savings time. So this bill is just another giant virtue signal, just like we were talking about. This whole proposition, everyone getting excited about abolishing daylight saving time, this bill is not going to do it. And
okay, maybe I'm dumb. So yes, I'm dumb. Yeah, exactly. But I don't understand. What does it mean to observe daylight saving time all year? Because 1 year you observe it, and then is it every year you fall back a year? So eventually they're going to be past the East Coast? I don't understand.
No, what it would mean is would stay on basically Arizona time, right? If I'm thinking of it right. Someone I'm sure will correct me on Twitter. We would stay on the same time. We wouldn't shift, but we would keep what we have now. We would be on this section, not the not the standard
spring
time.
Spring forward?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'd never spring forward. So basically time would just stay the way it is.
Yes.
All right, so what's the difference between that and opting out?
If we opt out of daylight saving time, then we'd have summertime all year round.
Don't we already have summertime all the year round in California? I'm really confused.
I'm confused now.
What happens if every state opts out? Does this become obsolete?
Yeah, the federal government allows states to opt out. They don't allow them to keep daylight savings time year round.
So if all 50 states opt out, this becomes nothing.
Yes.
Correct.
I have found my presidential campaign platform.
I will literally do nothing.
I will unite the states into doing nothing, and we will finally end the abomination of daylight saving time. We will finally agree on something.
But if Florida, if the law does change and they allow states to keep daylight saving time year round, then you'll have several states like Florida and California, which will shift differently than its neighbors in the same time zone. So it's only to get more complicated.
How will
is what
I know
I'm saying.
When Monday Night Football is on?
Imagine the announcements, right? Pacific and Pacific daylight. They'd have to do that every time.
If this doesn't do anything but prove that California and Florida are the same state, just on opposite ends of the spectrum, I don't know what does.
Your reelection campaign can be based entirely on reducing the time zones in the United States to two. The West Coast being 2 hours behind the East Coast, period.
I'm good.
Justin, 2020.
No, that's way too early, man. We gotta let The Rock be president first.
That's true.
Because we gotta go through the whole whatever Trump's gonna do again. Then once that all is done, then we can have The Rock run. Then I can run.
Okay.
Get Kanye's campaign out of the way, too, because Kanye's too crazy. You can't compete
with Kanye.
We'll
talk about some other people who shouldn't be president in Trailer Takedown.
Oh, that was a good segue there. I like that. I think we should just take that segue and run with it into the hopeful romantic with JML. I always open every review segment, every art segment with a review. But we do other reviews that are Patreon-exclusive reviews. So if you want to hear those, such as The Last Jedi or The Solo, a Star Wars movie, or other non-Star Wars movies such as, William, what was the VR one?
Ready Player One.
Such as Ready Player One, you can subscribe on Patreon. All level of Patreon subscribers get to hear those exclusive Patreon-only reviews. Patreon.com/TheMidside, TheMidside.com/Patreon. This week, I want to talk about Nathan Fillion's new show, The Rookie. And I'm going to ask the question I always ask, which always gets a no answer. Have either of you watched any episodes of this show?
Nope.
No.
Damn it. One of these weeks, it's going to be yes. One of these weeks, it's going to be yes. So Nathan Fillion, when you think of Nathan Fillion, what do you think of? What kind of roles do you think of him in?
The sort of Jack Sparrow of space role.
Exactly. Sort of like action comedy, right?
Yeah. Although he did that Castle, which was more like mystery comedy. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah, it was more like mystery comedy, but it still had the action element of like the police enforcement. For some reason, I've watched the first two episodes of this show, and for some reason, Nathan Fillion decided to take a more naturalistic show. I don't understand why actors and actresses do this. I don't understand why directors do this, why writers do this. You could argue that Damien Chazelle did this with First Man as well. You find something that works for you. You find your niche. It's something you're good at. It's something you enjoy. And then you try and deviate from it. In The Rookie, it's about a guy who lives in the Midwest, or he might live in California. It's very confusing at the beginning. But anyway, he goes to Los Angeles to become a rookie cop in his early 40s, or however old Nathan Fillion is at this point. And it's more from a naturalistic perspective, what they do every week. And every once in a while, in every episode, he's got like a couple lines that he delivers in a comedic way that you can tell that's the style he should be doing. And you're like, I want more of that, Nathan Fillion. But beyond that, it's like a more naturalistic approach. And I don't know why they do that. Is it because they think they have to do things to be like a serious artist? Like we've observed with all these comedians with, you know, Jonah Hill doing his mid-90s movie or Bo Burnham doing his eighth grade movie. Is it this yearning to be taken seriously? And isn't that also a misunderstanding? We take Nathan Fillion seriously for what he's good at. It's not like we're saying it's not serious talent to do what you do and do it well. So what is this?
I don't know. I mean, I think does it pay better? That's my first thought always, is that they took this role because it's more money than their previous roles. And they don't really think about like an integrated acting career, for instance, but maybe that's just the cynical approach to this.
You know, who thinks about an integrated acting career is John Hamm, but the money thing may be right. But at the same time, he's going to make more money off of Castle syndication than anything. If that doesn't prove that doing what you do and doing it well makes you money, especially how much money has he made off of Firefly in perpetuity? All the merch and all the appearances.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question.
So look, if you really, really, really love Nathan Fillion, you're not going to hate the show because it's still Nathan Fillion. You're like, yeah, I like that guy. The other characters aren't dislikable. They're not unlikable. They're not particularly likable. They just are. It's sort of like, oh, there's the black woman who wants to be a detective. And there's the Asian woman who wants to be taken seriously, even though she's dating Nathan Fillion, who's like 15 years older than her. And you get very confused because you're like, why didn't they just cast Summer Glau to play that? But then maybe that's confusing because she was River in Firefly. It's all very confusing, but you're not going to hate it. It's okay. There's just better stuff out there. So you should watch it if you've got a lot of free time and you got nothing else to watch. But you shouldn't watch it because there's a lot of better stuff out there. We're going to go into trailer takedown here in a second, but as always, if you want to know what the trailers are before the episode premieres, you should go to themidside.com and you can see the trailer takedown preview where we have all the trailers we're going to discuss on the episode, and you can watch them in any order you like. You can watch them before the episode, you can watch them after the episode, or during. You can pause and switch between us reviewing them and you watching the trailers because you have free will and you're an individual.
For now.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
House of Cards season 6. Is it 6, Daniel? Right. I don't know. 6?
Season crap.
Season way to lead with your review, Daniel. Is an entire trailer of House of Cards without Kevin Spacey. Instead, his wife on the show is the president of the United States. They hint at the beginning that he's died or something because they call her Commander in Grief. Get it? Get it? Commander in Grief. And then the whole trailer is like, just because I'm a woman, I won't shut up. I deserve to speak as much as anyone else. And then the guy who played Edmund Burke on Lost is in the trailer and he's apparently her enemy. But in the trailer, he doesn't really do anything against her. There's just a lot of like, oh, wow, you do stuff and I do stuff and that's not good in politics. And I don't understand, Daniel. I mean, you're going to have to explain this to me. But the only thing that made me happy in this trailer was like everything must end or something like that. And I was like, yes, please end this godforsaken show. Tackle.
There's nothing to explain because the show has written itself into a weird corner now where they just kill off a president and it's as if like, oh, that's fine. Don't worry about that. That's nothing. Let's focus on the lady who's now in the office. Which is like, that's a fairly devastating thing, right? It doesn't really matter if the president was liked or not. I feel like that would take up some news cycles. As opposed to this trailer where it's just like, let's move on with our lives. Everything's fine. Now we got a lady president. All well. Let's not talk about him anymore.
How did she become president, Daniel?
Well, they ran on the same ticket in the last season. It was
so Underwood. So she's vice president?
Yeah.
Wow.
The show went off the rails. It really did. So the show was so good in seasons 1 and 2, and there was no way they could sustain it because they just didn't have the talented writing staff that they needed for this kind of show.
Right, and they aped season 1 and season 2's plots from the British version, right?
Correct. It wasn't plot point for plot point, but it was overarching. It was very close. And then after, so the third season of the British show has to do with the monarch, which we don't have here. They're like, we have to make up our own crap. And it was terrible. And they decided essentially to give Claire, the wife, a bigger role in the show. And I'm sorry, no one watches the show for Claire. Everyone watches the show for Frank Underwood and his insanity. So an entire season with her as the main character is an entire season that I will not be watching. This is crap. It looks like crap. It was crap last season. Tackle.
So, yeah. Hooray, whammon. There's nothing redeemable at all in this preview. It's all just, I'm a woman, get over it. Virtue signaling, I'm out. Tackle.
And by the way, just to defend ourselves a little bit, it was Midsider Megan who submitted this trailer to us. So, complain to her, women.
I will note that the one kind of thing that piqued my interest a tiny bit, because I'm a political show nerd, is it seemed like they were setting her up as somewhat of a Trumpian character, where she was, you know, speaking to a rally about, like, the insiders are trying to tear me down, they're coming after us, like, these people who don't want you to have your say. So I thought, that might be interesting, and then I thought, nope, it's Claire Underwood, it's going to be boring as hell.
Past. Yeah, but that's what the left has always done. That's why it's ridiculous that they're mad that Trump's doing it. Trump just took their rhetoric and turned it against them. That's what they've always done. They've always said, oh, we're the ones who are on the outside, blah, blah. I talked about that at the Warped Tour I went to, where the guy went on and on about fighting the system and fighting the man and standing up for yourself and doing what you want. And then he goes, at the end, he goes, vote Democrat. And I was like, what? How does that follow? That's the rhetoric they've had since, what, the 60s?
Yeah. Indeed. It's just, in this particular time, having her be that kind of character, like I said, it kind of piqued my interest, and then I remembered it was Claire Underwood and not Frank Underwood, and I didn't care anymore.
Second trailer.
Spies in Disguise is an animated movie, so this is another trailer right for Daniel, starring Will Smith and Tom Holland, about a spy who's the greatest spy in the world, and then he's turned into a pigeon. Okay, guys, you need to help me here, all right?
Rob Schneider is a stapler.
Exactly. Look, I love Will Smith.
You don't get that reference.
I like the animation style. Though there is hold on, you're going to have your turn in a second, Daniel. There is the interesting thing of the, am I racist or did they make the spy look like him in the beginning, which is your whole thing about, like, well, they don't even do voices anymore. It's just their normal voice. Now we just animate them as themselves. But is this movie plot not manatees with beach balls? Is it not? They're like, let's take Will Smith and he's a spy and he's turned into a pigeon by Spider-Man. Like, what the hell is going on?
Rob Schneider is Tackle. A carrot. Oh god, if you don't get those references, you need to Google them. Yeah, I was so excited for this trailer, and for the first half of it, when Will Smith is a badass spy, I thought it was just going to be a sort of straightforward spy cartoon for kids that had some Will Smith humor, but otherwise was just great animation and interestingness, and then he gets turned into a GD pigeon.
I agree about the first half of the trailer, by the way. I was like, yes, this is the greatest movie ever. This is the movie we need.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I can't do it anymore, Hollywood. Like, I ask for original stuff, and I appreciate that this is original, and I will probably see it because it is a big animated film, and I'm into that. But my god, just do a straightforward film. Just an animated spy film starring Will Smith would be, I suspect, a huge hit. Not only with kids, but with adults, with everyone. I suspect people would love it. I certainly would. You don't need to turn into a pigeon. That being said, I will say that I laughed out loud at the look this way joke. I can't stop looking at you, or whatever he said. I did laugh out loud at that joke. But that being said, as much as I'm probably going to see this, like, in my heart, I don't want to see it. So, like, I have an emotional tackle for this film, but in reality, it's probably a super soft hug.
Hug.
Daniel, Is turn him into a pigeon the new ends in a church?
It certainly has the potential to be that.
All was going well until they turned him into a pigeon.
It's certainly this generation's jumping the shark, I feel like.
William?
I think turning Will Smith into a pigeon is problematic. It's denying African-Americans their James Bond in animated form. So I'm going to tackle.
He is putting on some offensive pigeon face in this movie. But
well, isn't Tom Holland in this movie putting on Richard from Silicon Valley face? Am I the only one who expected the voice to be Richard? And then when it was Tom Holland, had to be like, wait, who was that? And then figured out it was Spider-Man.
That's right. Spider-Pigeon. Does whatever a Spider-Pigeon does.
Final trailer.
Isn't it romantic? Is Rebel Wilson's version of Amy Schumer's movie, I Feel Pretty?
Thank you.
Except in this
end
movie.
End of review.
That's great.
Except in this movie, the fat chick, rather than hitting her head and believing she's pretty, hits her head and wakes up in a romantic comedy. This is what I will say about this movie. That is positive. I appreciate the meta-ness of it, and I appreciate that they're trying to parody and satire, either or, the whole genre. That has potential. I don't know what they're going to do with it, though. My worry is it's going to become social justice because they put the fat chick in the front. And also, it's problematic that it's Rebel Wilson who's not fucking funny at all. It is annoying more than anything. So part of me is like, yeah, I love this premise. I want this movie to be great. But the other part of me is like, I already went through this when my girlfriend wanted me to see Amy Schumer's movie, I Feel Pretty. And even she watched this trailer and was like, what is this trash? So if she's out, because I was like, I'm probably going to have to end up seeing this on Valentine's Day. But if she's out, I'm out. Tackle.
Daniel?
Tackle. William?
I appreciated the, I'm very picky when it comes to comedies. I actually laughed once in this trailer, and in honor of that, I'm going to give it the same kind of hug Daniel just gave to the last movie. Just very, very slight hug.
You have to say where you laughed. You have to explain it now.
I laughed when she went to jump onto the sexy hot guy, because she's like, oh God, I'm in a PG-13 movie. And then later she's like, the hot guy walks in and says, oh, I had a great night last night. And she's like, no, it just jumped cut to waking up the morning after. And he's like, well, we can do it again. And then it just repeats. And then she like jumps up and tackles him. It repeats. So that was funny. That was a good setup.
That was funny. And I legitimately, Daniel, and tell me if you did not laugh at this. I laughed at the PG-13 line because her delivery was actually pretty good, where she was like, my life's a fucking romantic comedy, and it's PG-13! I thought that was funny.
You would.
So did we invoke the rule here with Justin?
We did. Justin, you have to watch one of these films. Which one is it?
That's a tough one for me. Because, as I said, I'm sympathetic to Isn't It Romantic, because I like the meta-ness of it, and I like the whole send-up of it. But I'm also a big Will Smith fan. He's one of my favorite actors. So if I had to pick, I think I would have to pick Will Smith, because I think the premise is stupid. But if I go in accepting that the premise is stupid and that it's Will Smith, I'll at least enjoy it.
Oh, man.
But it's the ultimate disguise, Justin. Being a pigeon, you can be anywhere. How about
isn't
invisibility?
The ultimate disguise
except
is
Antarctica.
Or inside.
So then Tom Holland next time should become Pigeon Man rather than Spider-Man.
That's right. Pigeon Man. Oh, my God.
All right, let's move on to our final segment. It's time to talk about some more absurd things women are doing in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this line goes on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and The last 2 weeks, the last two episodes, this one and the previous one, have been great for the Life on the Midside because you all, Midsiders out there, have had submissions to us for things to talk about. That's great. This show is all about how each of us can be the best individuals we can be, and being able to talk about the things you're concerned about and want to know about makes the show more interesting for me. Does it make it more interesting for you, Daniel?
Yes, except that I haven't been on the last 2 weeks. So,
you know what? William, what about you?
I'm not on.
Of course, I love helping folks out and getting us through the farce that is reality right now out in the world.
So as always, if you want to share your farce with us and share what you want us to discuss, you can do it. We got the contact information on the website. You can do it through any of the social media channels. Just you can send it to any of us, but if you're going to send Woker Joke submissions, make sure you do that to Daniel. Or
yep,
where can you where else?
And don't forget to join us on our Discord server. It's a place where you can chat, text, or voice sometimes. If you guys hop in there, I hop in there and say hi too. And you can join our Discord server. It's really simple. Just go to themidside.com/podcast, click on the current episode, and right underneath the player, you'll see a giant join our Discord server link that will open up the app or the web browser, and you'll come right into our channel.
Wait, you've done voice chat in there?
Yeah. And if you if you're a Patreon subscriber, you get access to super secret channels. So make sure that once you join Discord that you connect it up to your Patreon, and you'll get access to our super secret channels and super secret voice chat.
We're going to have to do a voice meetup or something. I didn't know people wanted to actually talk to us. I thought text was fine.
Well, I guess they get tired of hearing your voice, but...
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, let's hear my voice some more. I'm going to read this submission. We have a new hire who wears dress shirts, but the way her shirt bunches up, especially when she's sitting, exposes her breasts between her buttons, and there seems to be a lot of space between her buttons. The paparazzi would be milking this if she were a movie star. I'd see everything if it weren't for her wearing a bra. Normally, I help people out by pointing out the unintended things that are happening to them, whether it's an untucked shirt or remnants of a sneeze. In this case, I'd like to help out, but I'm unsure if this could somehow blow back on me. I wouldn't hesitate if this were someone I was more acquainted with, but this person is new. So William and Daniel, what would you guys do? I'm assuming it's different for William because he's gay, but then again,
yeah,
the person may not assume you're gay.
People don't usually assume I'm gay. So
yeah, so there's that. So what would you guys do?
Do you want like what I would literally actually do in reality?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Why is that?
I don't know this person well enough. They're not a direct report to me. Like, I don't have any significant relationship with them. I just don't feel like I have that kind of obligation to strangers, essentially. Like, they either have managers or they will make friends or something. In this particular scenario, I would literally do nothing. That's me.
I'm the same way. And here's the other thing that I add on top of that. I'm assuming this person is an adult who's been an adult for a while. In a while, I mean at least 5 years. So this is how she's learned how to live for all these years. So the fact that she wouldn't be aware of this would either make me wonder how she got hired or what else is going on in her life. Because it seems like this would be something that if it's that bad, it's pretty noticeable to even her. And if she doesn't give a shit, then fuck it, I don't care.
Right. It's not a thing where you should risk the awkwardness of it for the sake of helping her out, because she can't be that oblivious to it, one would hope. So maybe she
and
likes
she
it
is,
that way.
How did she get hired if she's that oblivious to it?
Maybe she likes her shirt like this.
Maybe she wanted you to look, you fucking creep. It's a trap. It's a trap.
Well, I do have a little bit different answer than you guys. And as usual, context matters. So if this is something that's going to affect like maybe a presentation you're giving with her or you're visiting the customer site, something like that. If you don't have a relationship with this person, then absolutely, you know, the direct route is not going to work. But maybe you can approach her manager and mention it. Now, if you are the manager, I've got like specific guidance for that, because that is something that if you're a manager of someone and they're not, their choices in dress are not appropriate, then that's something absolutely you should give feedback on. And that's the way to do that is really important, because people can be like you said, this could be awkward. And I've had to give feedback before. I had someone who had serious body odor. Okay. They had like a medical thing. Right. And I don't think that person realized that it was not whatever they were, their current treatment was not working. And talk about awkward conversation. You have to go like, hey, we're about to go on this deployment. We're going to visit this place for a couple weeks and you smell, right? Like, that's not the right way to do it, right? So let's talk about what it really like boils down to. And if this person is interested, I can give you more information from my experience on Discord. But just know that you don't give feedback about the clothing. You're giving feedback on the choices, because the choice is the behavior. And you talk about the impact, and you can say like, hey, people might not take you seriously, or they might be distracted, right? That's the thing. Like, your choice in wearing this today may lead to people being distracted, right? And, you know, gender doesn't matter here. Like, you don't want to, like, it's not about that. You know, if you're a manager of folks and you have people dressing inappropriately, don't get caught up in the gender of the person. Just say exactly those words. Those are the words you need to say. And if someone pushes back, like, if you're a manager, I hope you're doing, you know, one-on-ones and you're giving feedback regularly. So this should be no big deal. And you can always, you know, step back and just repeat that. Like, hey, when you make this choice, this is what happens. Can you do something different in the future? That's that formula. You just repeat that formula. And if you need help, get help, right? If you're someone's manager that's not dressing appropriately, but like, know what the dress code is, know what the dress code policy is. And if something's not appropriate, if you're a manager, it's totally your job to do this. Now, in this context, it sounds like this person is not their manager, right? But I presume this person has a manager, and I would hope that that manager would address this, because appropriate dress is something that's important, and it goes sort of both ways, right? Like, if someone showed up to where I work in a suit, they're going to be wildly out of place, right? So think of it, I know that there's a lot of emotional charge around it, but think of it in that way. If someone was going to show up at my work and wear a suit, it's going to be wildly inappropriate. So just like if someone came in with a halter top and showing bare midriff and, you know, short shorts would also be inappropriate. Even though my work is pretty casual, that would be inappropriate. So, and it's inappropriate, not the clothing itself, right? That's where people get all triggered and caught up, right? You're saying your choice of wearing that to this meeting, your choice of wearing that to this presentation leads to these consequences.
Yeah, choice is so great, Wim. It's such a great way to put it. I mean, that's what I do with writing and communication too when I'm teaching these kids. And I tell them, it's not that what you're doing is wrong. It's just, what does the choice mean for this? Ready for another William buzzword from this episode? Context. Your choice in this context, what is it doing and what is it accomplishing and why did you do that? So I think everything you said is pitch perfect. I just want to ask one question. Even for the manager, doesn't gender matter in this case because it's a man to a woman? And in 2018, isn't that scary for a guy to do?
I'm not trying to invalidate people who are scared to have these conversations. But what I mean when I say gender doesn't matter is not that it doesn't matter in the sense of like you're just describing. I mean, it doesn't matter as in you need to apply the rule, the dress code equally, right? You need to be judging the appropriateness of the attire independent of gender, right? I'm not saying that it's independent of gender in the sense of like if a man came in showing, you know, with a four of his buttons undone and showing his hairy nipples during a meeting, that would also be inappropriate, right? Like, but what I'm saying is you're consistently applying it to all of the hundreds of genders that happen to be in your workforce.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was just saying that even if you try to apply it, I would.
But you notice the application is the same too, regardless of the gender. So I'm saying apply it to both genders or all genders if you're a social justice fan, and also apply it to all genders and hold and use the same method for all genders. In other words, it's not different depending on the gender of the person.
I get what you're saying. Daniel, do you understand what I'm saying at all?
Yeah. In those scenarios, if your company has it, you might you know, bringing in like someone neutral from HR to either have or be present during the conversation or
I if you're uncomfortable and it's pretty egregious, then yes. But that to me shows a failure. If you're a manager, that shows a failure in relationship. And what I mean by that is, if you're not doing regular one-on-ones, you don't already have a relationship, and you don't have this pattern of giving little bits of feedback, then that might be the only way. But then, we're talking about a deeper issue, right?
I'm sticking with we've now abandoned the actual scenario. We're talking about a managerial scenario, but I'm still keeping with the parameters somewhat of what they gave, which this person is brand new. So I'm assuming like there isn't a strong relationship with the manager even in this scenario.
Yeah. Well, if you wanted to do something, if this person wanted to do something, I think that the most appropriate thing would be to mention it to the manager and use those same words, right? Like this today, you know, when so-and-so made this choice of wearing this thing, this was the consequence. And then that's it, because you're not their manager, right? You're just saying, hey, this is what I noticed. I noticed today so-and-so made the choice of wearing this, and it was distracting to the meeting, or it was, it was distracting from the presentation, right? Again, it's about the behavior and the consequences. As long as it's about that, there's like very little that you can get in trouble for that.
So choices and relationships, I think those are the two big things out of what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That sums that up. And let's sum this episode up. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned who Shaun White was. I'm just kidding. No, I really learned that airports are busier tending to their social media than they are tending to their flyers. Get off social media, DFW and Reagan, and fix your GD parking garages.
William?
I've learned that we have a proposition to stay on daylight savings time, but no proposition to clean up the poop in LA and San Francisco.
Pooping on the street is a human right, William. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that it's possible for an emoji to look too crashy, and we need to have more naturalistic emojis. So we have to throw out like the two bunnies dancing emoji. Get that out.
And do we need the salsa dancing girl?
No, that's what I'm really saying. All of these, get rid of them.
That's right.
And my Bitmoji does not look enough like me. Come on, Bitmoji. It's too cartoony.
Right. We need more options. Why don't we make it photorealistic?
Yeah.
That's
Why
right.
don't we just make it like an avatar of ourselves and like it's a picture, and then we can have like details of our biography on the page, and it can be called like our profile.
And then people can write things like as if it was like graffiti on like a wall on our page.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they can be used to steal the election.
Hashtag Russians. I feel like we're onto something here. when we're glad you're onto something here, mainly us. Thanks for tuning in again. Some short reminders that you can review us on iTunes and Google Play. 5 stars, that helps us go up the ranks on those platforms. Subscribe there. You can also hear all the episodes on themidside.com/podcast. There's also a store there, themidside.com/store. T-shirts that are great. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. And Patreon. Don't forget about Patreon. Justin mentioned that. That helps us keep the lights on. And until next time, we love you lots.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
Feel like that was a little much for my first day back, William.
Oh, I gotta give you a lot, because you've been missing out.
Okay.